I wish I could go back to college.
Arkansas Rep's sixth and final main stage production of the 2012-13 subscription series is the much-anticipated musical Avenue Q. Winner of the 2004 Tony Awards for Best Musical, Best Score, and Best Book. Described by Bob Huff, Rep's producing artistic director, as one of the funniest shows he has ever seen. It is directed by Robert Colby Harper, associate artistic director for Phoenix Theatre in Phoenix, Arizona. He is no stranger to Little Rock and The Rep, having directed Hairspray and Les Miserables jointly with The Rep and Phoenix Theatre in recent years. He is a graduate of Pacific Conservatory of the Performing Arts and has a long list of credits as both performer and director. He is also currently a faculty associate in musical theatre for Arizona State University in Phoenix. When Robert Colby Harper and I met, I was full of questions, having no knowledge of Avenue Q, and began by referring to the publicity disclaimer, "not suitable for children," who seem knowledgeable beyond children's years these days.
I think it's the point of view of the piece that children may not get. Yeah, children are exposed to everything now with the internet and that kind of stuff. That warning gives parents the opportunity to choose for their children, which I'm all for. But I think you are right. I mean, I think the reason this show works, it harkens back to Sesame Street. I grew up on Sesame Street. Many of those puppets, Big Bird, were my friends, and I owned them. You know, I owned a Kermit the Frog, and I felt safe, and they taught me my ABCs, my 1-2-3s, and how to say please and thank you, and all that good stuff. We don't have that set of icons to teach us what to do once you graduate from college. You have big choices and you start making really big mistakes. That's kind of the framework of the show. It's this group of people who are trying to find their way in the world and trying to create their dreams and just running into things that kind of get in their way and make them have to make different choices. And this whole group of people, the puppets, the monsters, the people, the humans, we call them the Humes in rehearsal, they all work together to support each other and help each other figure out this crazy thing called life, because it's not always easy, and it's the challenges that make it worth it.
So the Sesame Street protective route to knowledge and understanding, allied with the Dungeons and Dragons or whatever those shows were that they used to watch, allied with maybe a little bit of good sense and a lot of enjoyment, is helping the growth of the characters who are seeking answers. Mm-hmm. The puppets, are they, I mean, what are puppets nowadays are so endearing. Have you seen the Metz production of Madama Butterfly?
No, I haven't.
In the last act where they bring in the small boy who's the product of Madame Butterfly and Sharpless, the villainous seducer. And it's a puppet, a marionette that is handled by three enormous men that you really can't see because the stage is dark. Mm-hmm. And it is the most endearing little figure. You relate to it. You almost weep for it. It's so nestled in, you know, it's so pliable with all these handles. And then you've got things like Warhorse, where you've got marionettes, puppets on stage that are there blatantly, not real horses, but apparently tear the heartstrings of everybody who watches that show. Are these the sort of puppets that you are handling? Because the man who's created the show has more or less created the puppets, has he not?
Well, he didn't create the show. He worked with the creators to develop the actual puppets. He's a puppeteer, and he builds puppets. So he designed the look of the original puppets and created them and still creates them. He has a shop.
And the people who are brought in to be in the cast have to learn to work the puppets.
They have to learn puppetry in the way these puppets work. Now, the puppets are reminiscent of Sesame Street, but they have more of a unified feel about them. He was very careful when he built them to, you know, like if, you know, one skin color was pink, he would make sure that somebody else's nose was that color, just to give them a unified, so they came from the same world. But the magic that you're talking about, I think that's what makes it special. What makes Warhorse special? What makes that moment in Madame Butterfly special. If you can take a non-animate object that doesn't, and you can get behind it and bring it to life in that creation and giving that object human qualities, it creates a magic. It also brings us in. It sucks us in as an audience, I think. And if you can get the audience to care about these little monsters and human characters that are puppets, that's when you've really done a service to the art of puppetry. And he's, Rick Lyon was who came out. He built the puppets. He came out and trained our actors for 3 days and worked with them. And it truly is an art form in itself. And I love any theater that mixes art forms.
And of course, puppets are, when you go back to Punch and Judy and all the other Commedia dell'arte stuff, from which we now owe a lot.
I think the difference is with this one is that you fully see the puppeteer. The puppeteer with the puppet is the character. Instead of, you know, many times you'll see the puppet full on, but the puppeteer will be masked or hidden or inside or whatever.
Or like Sound of Music, that's a sort of strings.
You see the strings. You don't actually see the puppeteer. And so this is, you know, fully exposed. And I think that's what makes it special.
Then I was just thinking while you were talking, the process of auditioning for this show.
Yes.
You have to add the dimension of somebody who's flexible enough and can pick up on what is needed and able to enter into the spirit. How do you audition for that?
Well, just as an artist, I think if you're going to be an artist, you have to be fearless. So I often, and you have to have a strong sense of play. And so that's what I look for.
So how many actual live people do you have on stage?
At last I counted, all the actors are alive.
That could be interpreted in different ways.
We'll see by the end of the week. Their arms are falling off right now from all the puppeteering they're doing. There are three human characters that are actually played by humans. Gary Coleman, a character called Christmas Eve, and then Brian. And then the other 4 to 5 members are puppeteers, and they handle all the puppet
characters. How many puppet characters are there?
Oh, good Lord. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think there's like 8 or 9. There's like 10.
It's a musical.
It is.
And the puppets sing?
Yeah.
And do they sing in puppet voices or human voices?
You mean like character voices? Mm. The two, what I would call the romantic leads, the puppeteers sing in their usual voice. And then all the other puppet characters have some kind of difference in pitch or tempo or whatnot to separate them out. And the characters are actually set up to be pretty big.
And so the audience will know which story, in the story, which character is singing or acting.
Oh, yeah, because they change puppets.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So the music itself, what sort of music is it? Is it rock? Is it easy listening? Is it
smooth jazz? No, it is. It reminds me of a really sophisticated, more contemporary version of a Sesame Street song.
Oh, one that might have been taken out of the show and put onto a CD.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. The music has the very beginning of the opening number, the music sounds like da 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 da. So it has that kind of real melodic quality that a children's program would have. So, but then the lyrics are pretty sophisticated and talk about things like racism and
they're the ones that children should not be allowed to hear.
Yeah, but I mean the songs for me, the music in this show really tackles what's going on in the character's head and there's a lot of recitative, really, kind of, like in a Sondheim, kind of. But they really interact with the music. The music's really active in its lyrics, which I find kind of refreshing, because not all musicals are like that.
What sort of a unit? What is it, a small string unit? Is it a combo with
it's
jazz
a,
music?
I think it has 7 pieces, or orchestra.
The show also When did you see it? When it first came out?
Oh, Lord. I saw it in Phoenix. A tour company came through, and I was directing it at my theater in Phoenix that I work at. So I went to see the tour first, and then I directed it like 3 years ago.
But it won several awards when it...
It did. It won the Tony for Best Musical.
Because I was thinking, is this the sort of show that you could see in another 4 years that lyrics might be changed to be much more contemporary?
There are a few references. There's one reference that these two cuddly bears called the Bad Idea Bears, they show up and give you really bad ideas and coax you into following those ideas. They say, you know, Judge Judy, watch Judge Judy when you feel sad and alone. And which I still find funny. When I went to New York, when I went to do the auditions, I went and saw the off-Broadway version. Mm-hmm. And they changed that to Honey Boo Boo to make it more contemporary.
Yeah.
And then there's a song at the end called For Now, and there's always contemporary references. And those tend to change. But I think as a show itself, it's so contemporary. I think it has a shelf life. Because it speaks to our human nature.
Which doesn't change.
And we all make bad decisions and bad choices. This show just frankly talks about them and exposes them so we can laugh at them. And the puppets help put a safe distance so that even if you are offended by some things, you can still laugh at it. Because it's funny, if this show was done with all actors, humans, no puppets, I don't think it would be as popular because people, it's funny, we can forgive puppets' behaviors faster than we can forgive each other's. And I find that an interesting quality.
And also find yourself becoming endeared to a character that if you met in the flesh, you'd probably not really want to know.
Right, right. And it's just laugh out loud funny, you know, for me. Because it talks about things like racism, frankly. Everybody dances around words and can I say that word? Or did we change it? Or was it changed? They really talk about it in a song called Everyone's a Little Bit Racist. And it's shocking because we don't, as a society, we don't permit it. And we're trying to all be so PC that we actually don't connect. Mm-hmm. We don't actually talk about things. And people have questions. Sometimes we don't feel like we can ask them. Sometimes we don't feel like we can talk about them. Well, these puppets talk about them. I was surprised, you know, because Phoenix is a conservative audience, can be. It sold out and people were coming back. We were very careful of letting people know what the content was. But I think if you give people the opportunity to know what they're getting into, they're more apt to come and try something new if they're prepared for what they're going to see. I've talked to Rick Lyon, and he knows what's happening, you know, when all the tour is going out. And he goes, yeah, it reaches a very wide audience. And I think that's why I personally love this. It makes us look at our humaneness a little without so much judgment. And we can look at ourselves as humans. And I think anything that helps us connect with each other, any theater, music, whatever it is, it needs to be done. It needs to be seen. And I think, ironically, this little puppet musical has done that. And I think that's why it's still going. It could have been a fad and just faded away. But it's still running in New York. Still productions all over the country. And we're doing it again back in Phoenix because it sold so well. And people enjoyed it so much. So we're reviving it.
Robert Colby Harper is the director for Arkansas Rep's 2012-13 season finale, Avenue Q, which officially opens on Friday, June the 7th, on Rep's main stage in Little Rock. For tickets and further details, visit online www.therep.org. "2013 is the 18th season for the Hot Springs Music Festival, and the occasion is being dubbed Coming of Age, given the importance the 18th birthday holds in the lives of most Americans. For this celebration, the two people most responsible for putting the show together have chosen to join the rest of the Western musical world to celebrate the 100th birthday of English composer Benjamin Britten and the 200th of Italy's Giuseppe Verdi and Germany's Richard Wagner. So festival music director Peter Bay and general director Todd Cranson joined me a few days ago to highlight some of the programming in this year of the Titans.
The looming bicentennials of two extraordinary composers, Verdi and Wagner, and a centennial composer, Britten. And how are we going to combine these three? They have something in common, which is opera.
Was there any rivalry between you so that by the time you'd put it all together, one particular composer had got the lion's share of programming?
It's interesting because Verdi wrote nothing for symphony orchestra outside of operas. Opera preludes or overtures. There's a string quartet by Verdi, but there are no symphonies by Verdi, no tone poems. Wagner, you have arrangements or chunks of instrumental interludes from various operas and overtures. Britten, there's lots to choose from. But I think maybe overall the leaning is towards no one because we found lots of arrangements of arias and melodies from various operas arranged for flute and piano or clarinet and piano, maybe even brass.
Yeah, I did lean heavily in the brass direction, but Peter kept us all in check.
Looking at the printout of the program, you start with a bit of Verdi and you end with Verdi, and there looks like a bit of Verdi in between. So it seemed to me that he is probably the most listenable to of all three major composers. But they're all so different. So you couldn't say, well, we've had enough of that, we'll go on to something else. With Benjamin Britten, the more you listen to him, the more melody there is in his works, and you suddenly realize why now he is so much more popular than he was then.
The other two, of course, Wagner and Verdi, were romantics through and through, and our opinion of them has not changed. I think, but Britten's, we have changed our opinion on him.
So now we come to the works that you did choose. Why and how did you, in all that wealth of material to choose from, come up with something that would speak to what the Hot Springs Music Festival is there for and will enrich the programming, the apprentices coming, the crowds coming, in a way that to celebrate your 18th anniversary would be appropriate?
That's quite a question. I think one of the things we looked for was variety. And since the festival is primarily the one of chamber music with orchestral concerts in between, in the case of Britten, it seemed like we were going to choose lots of chamber music. And there was lots to choose from. We have a work for pipe organ. We have a work for solo oboe. And we wanted to play something from his most famous opera, Peter Grimes, which is why I selected the 4C interludes, which is also a wonderful piece to play with a young orchestra. There's energy in it, there's anger in it, there's a lovely reflection in it, and has all the kinds of qualities that, any musician of any age can learn from.
It's so programmatic, it's almost a cliche to call it programmatic. The exquisite opening, the real stormy weather that I don't think has been matched by anybody writing Storm at Sea, even Wagner and the Flying Dutchman. I think that Storm at Sea interlude that Benjamin Britten has written is spine-chilling.
It really is. I mean, it's kind of a successor to La Mer. There's a wonderful storm scene in La Mer, too. But I think the fact that it is a more contemporary-sounding storm, somehow we relate to it more than the usual just go up a chromatic scale like Liszt might have done, or maybe even Wagner, for that matter.
But Britten has a very, very rocky coast.
Indeed.
And storms that batter the island. Benjamin Britten's music catches it.
Indeed. In fact, I went to England. I went to Aldborough to make a pilgrimage to where Britten lived. And in the opera Peter Grimes, there's something called the Moot Hall. And I had no idea that this was actually a real edifice. It's right on the shore there. And it was a winter day when I was there. And I can certainly understand how Britten was able to just stand out there perhaps and get the flavor of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all in his music.
Well, I'm delighted you've got that particular episode in his career. But they've also got, and I don't remember them, the Metamorphoses of Ovid.
Right, for solo oboe. I forget for whom it was written, but there are six short movements. They all have such great character. They're short movements, but in each one you get a flavor of what each metamorphosis was.
And you were talking about, you know, how did we decide on these things for the festival? Well, from the practical and educational standpoint, we've done something like this before, but our oboe apprentices and mentor are going to divide out the six movements in each performance.
Oh, I wondered about this.
So the entire oboe studio will be performing that piece just one at a time. And the same goes for quite a few of the chamber orchestra pieces, not that they will be split up like that, but thinking about our apprentice musicians that are on the cusp of professional careers and giving them opportunities. Peter, just a story I didn't even share with you. I'm working on part assignments now yesterday, and one of the clarinetists wrote in to the clarinet mentor and said, you know, I'll play anything you want, but please put me in Siegfried Idol.
Uh-huh.
You know, so Peter brings this brilliance of musical programming to figuring out exactly what we're going to do. And I keep one foot in practical world there and just thinking about what's going to be good for our students. I was a teacher before I got this job. And so that's kind of how the whole thing came together.
I'd get back to mentors. How many mentors now have become mentors that were apprentices first?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I am one.
I know.
Our former clarinet mentor, who is taking a leave of absence this year, he was the second to return. That
may be it.
It right now. Off the top of my head, no. However, it's great fun to keep in touch with mm-hmm. all of these former apprentices and things. And we have an associate ensemble in residence that will be there this year. It's a piano trio named Canadae.
I saw that,
and
yes.
And they met at the 2010 Music Festival, two of the three of them, enjoyed performing together, have kept it up and continued, and now formed this piano trio and have had a great start to their career as a trio, and they will be here for the 2 weeks and performing on our opening night, as well as doing a full-on recital on June 13th.
Where do they get the name? Is that the name of one of the players?
No.
That's a terrific question. We're about to find out the answer to that. I believe it's a Japanese name.
It is a Japanese name, and I could read you the very eloquent that they gave to me in the program book. The name Canadae was inspired by the Japanese verb Canadae Ru, which means to express one's spirit through music. Canadae, as a piano trio, strives to create a musical atmosphere that resonates with and communicates to the core emotions of their audience, offering the most personal experience possible.
Very nice. Britain, in this third day, you've got Verdi on the first at the opening of the whole festival. And I wanted to ask you about winner of the Dallas Symphony's competition for a horn player.
One of our opening fanfares, yes. Brian Sadler is a composer who I do not know yet, but I do look forward to talking with him and meeting him. This fanfare is something that I stumbled across, and it's just a wonderful one-minute fanfare, and to me it sounds like video game music. as I looked more into his background and everything, come to find out, he writes music for video games.
As I say, it must have been quite a... How did you put it together? Because you've got so many concerts and you've got so much available to the public to go to in rehearsals and things. You've got the progressive concert that was new last year, wasn't it? And now you've done something extra with the bathhouses that is, again, a slight variation, isn't it?
Yes. Last year, for the progressive concert, seemed like a great idea, but I had no idea it would be as successful as it was, and we had more people than we knew what to do with there. I mean, my estimate would be over 1,000 people there, and there was no way we could possibly get even a fraction of them inside the bathhouses for the concerts we had planned. So this year, we are going to alter the plan just slightly. It will still go just as it did last year, in that it will start on the south end of Bathhouse Row and progress north, and the audience will move from location to location where the free outdoor performances are offered. And when we get to the plaza between the Fordyce and Maurice bathhouses, we will have a brass ensemble short performance, as we did last year, except from there, we're going to do something new this year. The Natural State Brass Band from here in Little Rock will offer a 45-minute concert on the Stevens Balustrade, which is up near the promenade right there by that plaza. And then simultaneously, inside three of the bathhouses, we will have indoor concerts. And those three indoor concerts will be ticketed. People will need to buy tickets in advance because we can only accommodate about 50 to 75 people in each bathhouse. So it will be a truly intimate, delightful chamber music experience. But then for the mass crowd that chooses not to buy a ticket, we will have the Natural State Brass Band performing a free concert outside.
And there won't be any conflict of sound bleeding from one into the other?
Well, there might be, but it's a festival. It's as fun. I don't think that it will be of any real significance. My wife and I are renovating one of the bathhouses right now, and as our architect said, they're not going to blow away. They're made of solid concrete. So if there is any sound penetration, it will be very small, and I think in the fun atmosphere that this event is, it won't be any problem.
Are you renovating it to live in it or to hold it possible for future festival activities?
We are renovating it to open up a brewery and distillery in Hot Springs National Park.
Ah, what will you call it?
We'll call it the Superior
Festival
Bathhouse
Beer.
Brewery and Distillery, and it actually has nothing to do with the festival.
So you won't, at this point, know particularly whether it's going to be Wagner, Britten, or just special?
Inside the bathhouses, the repertoire is set, and it is on our website at hotmusic.org. Mm-hmm. You can click on the June 8th and see the program inside each of the bathhouses, so you can choose what you want.
Do the crowds seem to be growing?
They do. Especially some of the specific things we have done to reach new audiences, I think that they are starting to take root and work. The progressive concert, I anticipate this year, will be larger than last year. Last year, we had Rick Robinson as Mr. Cut Time, doing classical revolution-style performances in restaurants and unsuspecting places. And people that he met in those places ended up coming to concerts. We've put a real push out to younger audiences, working with other organizations that specifically attract young audiences. And I know in the time since last year's festival, I have a lot more volunteers and people that are getting involved who are younger audiences. So we're making good steps towards building new audiences.
The Hot Springs Music Festival, General Director Todd Cranson and Music Director Peter Bay. The 18th birthday celebration season gets underway next Sunday, June the 2nd, with a traditional opening fanfare on the Arlington Hotel terrace, and the festivities continue from there till June the 16th. Visit hotmusic.org for details on rehearsals, free, tickets for events and festival passes, or call 501-623-4763. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio.